Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hello, everyone. I've got a very special guest today, former Raiders offensive coordinator Tom Walsh. He coached Bo Jackson, Marcus Allen, Jim Plunkett, Cliff Branch, Todd Christensen, a whole lot of Hall of Famers. And he recently started doing a little work with Raiders Today, which is part of the SI Network. I saw it. It was great. And now Tom has been generous enough to work with me. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Grant. Glad to be with you.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really love the podcast you did with Hondo Carpenter, and I had to ask you some questions about the 49ers. So let's get right into it. As a offensive coach yourself, when you watch what Kyle Shanahan's been doing for a long time, what do you admire about him as an offensive coordinator and a coach?
You know, Grant, I tell you, the one thing about which I really enjoy watching Kyle is the opening series of the game. The one thing he does well, you give him that first series, you give him the week of preparation, he has some very unique movement schemes and some excellent play-action passes. And he strikes early. He takes a few shots down the field. He's always got something with multiple shifts and motions, kind of probing with the defense. And then he has a shot play in there. And I think his first series is really creative, designed well, and has a lot of thought to it.
I believe the Niners scored more touchdowns on their opening series than any other team last year. And as an offensive coach, I could see watching the script. You made tons of scripts. So I could see you admiring that. Do you feel he has one of the better opening scripts in the league, like up there with Andy Reid?
He does. I tell you, the one thing about it is the ability of the run game for the 49ers really helps set up his play action package. So when you start out your first series, you know, you're able to either come with the run and then followed up sequentially with the play action off of the run. So now you're giving the defense a similar look, creating pressure on the secondary to fill as the eighth defender in the box, for example. You get a single high coverage, whether it's a three deep or a man or a three deep zone scheme. And you got a shot pass in there as well. And you know, it's a momentum builder for the offense to start well like that and to move down the field and matriculate the length of the field and put the ball in the end zone.
Kyle Shanahan replaced Chip Kelly, who was supposed to be an offensive genius. But I remember him with him, it seemed like his run plays and his play action plays didn't really match up that well. And with Kyle, it seems like his runs and his play actions really do look alike.
Well, that's what makes it so successful. And you're giving the defense the same look continuously, where Chip was running. He was running plays, and they weren't, you know, compatible, and they were not mirrored on the run action, and, you know, it doesn't work as well.
Let me ask you about one more question about the opening script. How collaborative is that process? Like, do you think he asked his dad, "Hey, Dad, you want to take a look at what I got cooked for this week?" Or is that, was it all you when you were doing the opening script?
No, actually, our philosophy at the Raiders was we wanted a united, combined effort. And we put everybody up on the board, and we'd have big meetings on Tuesday when we started putting together the game plan. And we had whiteboards all across the room. The whole place was a whiteboard. And you just started on one end and just went around the horn. And, you know, you could have 40, 50 plays up there by five or six coaches. Nowadays, you got 30 coaches. It's a circus. And back then, we had eight. That was it.
Okay, let's look at the other side of the coin with Kyle Shanahan. He's accomplished a whole lot as a coach, but he hasn't won a Super Bowl, and he's never been the coach of the year. He's missing a little hardware. Someone who has two Super Bowl rings, where does Kyle Shanahan need to improve to finally get over the hump?
Okay, let me say this about that. There comes a point in the game as a head coach, and he's the play caller as well. You got to know how to close out the game. I hate to say it that way, it's kind of blunt, but you know, when you got a lead like he has had in, I believe, three Super Bowls, one is the coordinator in Atlanta, two is the head coach in the Niners, and he's been ahead 28 to what, three? He was up by 25 points against Brady midway through the third quarter. I believe he was up twice against Andy Reid in the fourth quarter, was he not?
He was.
I'm sorry, but you know, the great guys know how to close out the game. And the bottom line is you have to have a script in your mind and you have to have rehearsed it as a coach, as a play caller. Okay, I'm going to put you in situational football. We're going to practice this. We're up by nine and there's X amount of time in the game. The ball's going to be on this position of the field. Here's what we're going to do to seal the deal. And you've got to practice it. You've got to script it. The players have to know what to anticipate from you and how you're going to go about shutting the door on the opponent.
Yeah. I love that. So it comes back to a script. You said what you like most about Kyle is his script when it's 0-0 in the first quarter. It's a great script. But where's the script in the fourth quarter when he's up 7?
But see, that's the point. He has to understand that you have to have multiple scripts for certain situations. And it's about situational football. And you've got to be able to orchestrate that during the week. And you just can't put the ball on the ground after your first series and just call plays. The bottom line is he may have plays early in the game that he likes to feature to attack the defense and a play action pass and a shot pass over here. And he does have some creative play action schemes early in the game. But then where do they go? Where are his after halftime scripts? Where are his 4-minute scripts? Where are his scripts that, okay, you're up by 7 and there's 8 minutes to go on the clock. Now, how am I going to grind the game? How am I going to melt the clock? How am I going to be able to shrink, take the air out of the ball from the opponent? You know, I can't let Mahomes get back on the field. So
right.
Now,
right.
The classic case in the past Super Bowl, and you are more tuned in than I, but in the third quarter, I believe the Chiefs started with the ball and threw an interception. And the Niners were up how many points at that time?
7.
7, at least. Now, that would be a great opportunity right there from Kyle's perspective to be able to take momentum back in the Niners' favor. You shut down. You got the interception. You turned over Mahomes. You got him off the field. Now, I would like to have him go cool off and sit on the bench and keep Mahomes on the bench for a while. I want to run the clock right now. I want to bring back my run game. I want to knock him off the line of scrimmage. I want to be able to keep the momentum I just gained from my defense turning the ball over. Instead, I think at that point, in that third quarter, when he had 9 or 11 passes, two of which were completes, and he ran the ball, two or three times, and he has a McCaffrey who's supposed to be the offensive player of the year and all that. You gotta go back to the base. You gotta run the ball. You gotta start and get the momentum back on your side. You gotta be able to swing the game over to yourself. He had a great chance there to really put himself up by 2 scores.
And yeah,
he had eat him clock time.
Yeah, he had 3 Super Bowls to prove that he was a closer, that he could close the deal, and he couldn't do it in any of them. So my question is it easier to call plays in the first quarter when you're not really worried about the clock and the score is close than it is when you're got 8 minutes left and it's very much about the situation?
No, because by that point, you've got a tremendous feel for the game. You have all the momentum. You have a great tendency on what the opponent's doing. See, the thing about it, when you start a ball game, you start calling plays, you know, you've worked on what you think the defense is going to do and what they have shown you and what their tendencies are against you previously in your history against them. But then as the game unfolds, I see how the defensive coordinator may now have altered his mindset. You know, the bad thing about it is you as an offensive coordinator have a feeling of what the opponent's going to do. You got your players who you want to feature. It's like my quarterback is a blackjack dealer, and I got Kittle, I got Debo, I got Ayuk, I got Juice, I got
McCaffrey.
McCaffrey. I've got a deal card. I got to give them all a pat hand. So I've got to get them all in the game early. And while I'm doing that, at the same time and featuring each one of them and establishing them as a weapon, I'm also probing how the defense is responding to what I'm doing, to my motions, my shifts, and my formations. So now I get a feel for it. I've got a guy upstairs charting everything, what they're doing against all my sets, with the motions and the shifts. Are they squirming safeties? Are they bumping it? Are they traveling with corners with wide receiver motion and all that kind of stuff that you go through? And then as the game progresses now, I have built a book on what the defense is doing today. So by the time I get to the third or fourth quarter, you know, I have a better feeling. It's like in baseball, I'm up at bat my third or fourth time in the seventh or eighth inning. I now have, especially if the same pitcher's in the game, I got a book on him and he's got a book on me, but I have a good idea of how he pitched me the first two or three at bats. So what can I anticipate now with my next, same thing with the defense, giving me another a set for another offensive series. I got a feel.
So what you're saying for Kyle Shanahan, the way he can improve, what he needs to improve is closing the deal late in games with a lead. And the way to improve it is to actually rep it in practice, do situational football, tell the team, this is the score, this is the time left. How often do you feel teams do that anymore with these abbreviated practices? And how much did you do it back in the day?
With the way the schedule is set now and your time restraints and your meeting restraints and things, situational football is more important now than ever. You just cannot put the ball on the ground on a hash mark and just run plays. And the ball stays there and you just crank out plays. It's not about running plays anymore. It's about running situations and what you're going to do in those situations to be able to take advantage of the opportunities about how to run out the clock, how to come from behind. Do I need 3 points? Do I need 6 points? Do I need two scores? You know, that all is what I have to practice to be able to put the players in the mindset and the assistant coaches in the mindset about what's going to happen on Sunday if those situations arise.
Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. Oh, sorry about that, Tom. Keep going.
No, the bottom line, Grant, is I'm going to run plays with a purpose. Mm. Not just run plays. Mm-hmm. Each play during practice has to have a purpose as to why it's being run. What is the situation? Where is the ball? Where's the down in the distance? What's the clock time? What's the score? Are there openers or am I trying to close out the game? Am I trying to catch up? Am I playing from ahead or am I playing from behind? What's the weather conditions like? You know, what do I have to practice with a wet ball because the forecast is for 80% rain or whatever? I got to do that. So all week, the whole thing is set red zone, high red zone, low red zone, you know, down and distance situations. That's all got to be orchestrated. You are like the maestro and your players are like the orchestra. It's like the Boston Pops. It's like the symphony. And you are the maestro. You got the baton in your hand as a play caller. And now you got to be able to get which part of the orchestra you want. Do I want the brass? Do I want the strings? Whatever. That's what you're doing as a play caller. You got to bring those guys to life and you got to put it together.
Yeah. And it seems to me that with the 49ers, during the regular season, they're so stacked on offense. They get out to these big leads. And a lot of times in the fourth quarter, they don't really have to play situational football. It's kind of like, you know, just hit the starters and have them wear caps on the sideline. But in the playoffs, it's a whole different thing. And it seems like maybe this is something that they overlook. They don't practice enough. Because if you can keep the game close against the Niners, as the Chiefs have shown, you can take them down at the end. So this is something they got to make a point of emphasis.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, you have to practice in adverse situations or also practice in prosperous situations. You know, you've got to be able to practice how to play when you're ahead, and you've got to be able to practice how to plague when you're behind. And so you've got to create that environment. Everyone thinks, oh, take it for granted, we're ahead, we can just run our plays. Well, now, what specific plays do you want to run when you are ahead so that you, as I say, close out the game? And you've got to practice that. Here's how we're going to shut it down. This is how we're going to maintain control. This is how we're going to continue to dominate and continue momentum in our favor in the fourth quarter. These are the key runs and play actions and dropbacks that we're going to utilize to seal the deal.
Well, if Kyle Shanahan had this part of his game down, it's possible that he would have 1, 2, maybe 3 Super Bowl rings right now. Let's switch gears and talk about the quarterback. It's possible if Brock Purdy were elite, the Niners would have a Super Bowl ring as well. I'm curious to see how you see him. Is he an elite quarterback? He's had one of the best starts to a career of any quarterback ever. Or is he a good quarterback who's propped up by a system and a supporting cast? How do you look at Brock?
Well, he's got certain tools and certain attributes that are very good that you like. Okay. On the other hand, I think sometimes quarterbacks get too much of the credit and too much of the blame. And you've got to have a supporting cast. I mean, okay, classic case. Let's take a look at Dan Marino, one of the most prolific passers of all time. How many Super Bowl rings has Dan got? Zippo. Yeah, zero. The donut. Not his fault. Mm-hmm. As great as he was, how many does Jim Kelly have? Zero. How many does Fran Tarkenton have?
Zero.
Zero. See, so it's more than just the quarterback. You know, the quarterbacks, I mean, then you look at Bob Greasy, went in the Super Bowl. I think he threw the ball 12 times in the Super Bowl game. Okay? So you've got to look at, consider everything. Now, you got to look at the resume for this kid, Brock Purdy. It's still kind of small. Greatness and success and quality is over a period of time. You got to have, it's like when Art Shell was playing tackle and Pro Bowl and Upshaw and Otto and those guys for us, you know, success for them and greatness was over a period of years. It's not just a one-year wonder. You know, you've got to do it again and again and again and again. And so now he has promise. He's shown success. How is he going to grow? How is he going to mature? And then how are the players around him going to respond that he can make them better and they can make him better?
It seems like in today's age of media, there's always a rush to be the first person to say that a certain player or quarterback who's had a good year or two is elite. And we saw this 10 years ago with Colin Kaepernick. He had this incredible start to his career, and Ron Jaworski said he just might be the best quarterback of all time if things go well. There's a rush to crown people and say, I see it first, he's elite. And what you're saying is eliteness, greatness is something that's achieved over time.
It is. It's quarterback play. Look at Joe Montana. Look at Steve Young. I remember when we were in L.A. at the time in El Segundo, and Steve was the quarterback for the L.A. Express. And Sid Gelman, who's my mentor and everything, is working with John Hadle. Sid took Steve Young under his wings in the USFL and groomed them and everything and worked with them, refined his skills. He was a halfback playing quarterback. God, Steve Young had fabulous. You look at his legs and you look at it from the hips down, you swore if you did not know who the guy was and you just saw the hips down, you would have swore the guy was a running back. He had fantastic lower body build. But Sid worked with him daily. I would go over during the offseason and watch practices because John Fox, who had coached for me, was also coaching for the Express. And I knew Hadle from his days with the Chargers and everything. And so I'd go over there and watch him and Sid would be talking about it. But those guys were not elite to start with. You know, it's a process. It is a process. It's a maturation. Quarterback is a game of repetition. You got to play. It's about how many thousands of reps you need physically and mentally to groom a quarterback to be able to play in all the circumstances and the situations and be effective and to be a leader and distribute the ball and to orchestrate the whole team and run it from the sideline to the huddle up to the line of scrimmage and go from there. But I like what his skill set is. And the key thing for Kyle is to continue to take advantage of what Purdy does well, which may not necessarily be what Kyle wants to do. Mm. Here's the bottom line, Grant. I got to coach the players I have, not the players I wish I had. And so with what Brock can do and how he can develop and how he can mature, Kyle needs to focus on what does this young kid do well. And we're going to accentuate that, and we're going to design the offense around how he can play and what he can execute so that we can get the best benefit of it.
Well, you mentioned what Brock Purdy does well. As a coach, as an offensive coach, you're looking at Brock. If you were his coach and you were building the offense around him this offseason, what would you want to feature? What does he do well?
You know, the one thing about which I like, especially even back when he first started playing, he displays remarkable poise. Number one thing is you like a quarterback who's got that even keel, not emotional, no highs and no lows. You know, you like to say, okay, you don't want to say a flatliner, but you like him to be able to maintain the poise. You know, Jim Plunkett had that, okay? Those guys are able to handle the adversity, maintain the calm in the huddle. Okay, guys, relax. Let's settle down. It's one play at a time. We can't score 9 points. We're going to go one play at a time, work our way down the field. He exhibits that. I like his improvisational skill. He may not be the fastest of all the quarterbacks, but he has a sense of when to get out of the pocket, when to move, when to slide up, when to whip out the back door. And that is a gift. But you look at how many snaps he's had as a starting quarterback in high school, how many snaps he had as a starting quarterback in Iowa State. So he's had thousands of reps. He's been in adverse situations. They were not phenomenal at Iowa State. He had to play in some games where they did not do as well. But he got experience. He learned from those situations. And he's retained that. And his memory is good. His instincts are good. He doesn't have the greatest arm, but he doesn't need the greatest arm. Timing is what you create between the quarterback and the receivers. Joe Montana couldn't throw the deep ball. I mean, I look at some of the quarterbacks that are now successful in the league, and I look back at our philosophies offensively, and there are guys who would not have been able to play and satisfy Al because they did not have the arm. You know, when you got to go like a Branch and you got James Jett, you got Tim Brown, you got James Lofton, you got Mervin Fernandez, you got Willie Gault, you got Sam Grady. I mean, you know, we had Olympic relay teams together who could probably qualify for the Olympics. When you take the Jets and the Gaults and the Gradys and all those guys and all their medals in the Olympics, you got to get the ball down the field. So arm strength and distance was a factor for us. Whereas in other clubs, you can design the offense around, you know, the quarterback who may not have that long arm in his repertoire.
You kind of brought this up, but would Al Davis have wanted Brock Purdy?
You know, I hate to say it, as nice as he does play, you can design an offense around what Brock can do.
Yeah.
But you've got an owner who already has a philosophy of what he wants to see and what he wants his offense to be, the vertical strike. Brock would not have made our draft board. I'll be honest with you.
Interesting. Well, he almost didn't make the Niners draft board. He was the last pick.
He made a lot of draft boards. Okay, let's be honest, okay?
Yeah. That's interesting. So, yeah, he wouldn't have fit. Would Joe Montana have fit your offense? It seems like Al really had a specific vision for what he wanted.
You know, I tell you this. Bill's not around anymore, so. And, you know, a great offensive mind himself had been a running back coach for the Raiders in 1966. They actually came to us about Joe. We watched tape about Joe. And the bottom line is, successful as he was, and great quarterback, I tell you, some of the best footwork I've ever seen. It was like watching a ballet in act when Joe was dropping. His footwork, his timing, his rhythm, he had a gift. He would have been a great infielder, or he would have been a great point guard in basketball. You know, he just had a a tremendous skill, a great, unique attribute with footwork, with timing, with his body mechanics and all that. But he didn't have the length in his arm to be able to get the ball down the field to the point where it would satisfy, Al. And I, as great as he was, it would have been a struggle. I mean, that's hard enough. You got a guy like a Cliff Branch, wide open, running the length of the field. You got to get the ball down the field. You can't have your great receivers checking up on their speed, because they can only get so far down the field. Say, well, Joe's arm can get it, say, 51 yards. So when we get past that point, we know we can't get the ball to the guy, even though he's open. You can't have a relay guy. We're not throwing from right field to the cutoff man back to home plate or the third base. You got to be able to get the ball there yourself. So greatness has to also fit with what philosophies you've got.
So when Al called Bill back and they said, look, no thanks, but what about that Steve Young guy? Is he available?
Nah, Steve was untouchable then.
I bet. Okay, let's talk about Bill for a second. Would Bill Walsh have wanted Brock Purdy? It's a different philosophy.
See, that was right up Bill's alley. See, when Bill left the Raiders and then he went to the San Jose Apaches in the Continental Football League for that 1 year, then he went to the Bengals, with Paul Brown, and they had a new franchise in Cincinnati. They drafted this kid from Cincinnati named Greg Cook, right-handed quarterback from the University of Cincinnati. He played at Nippert Stadium right on campus. Now, there was the arm, there was the talent. Greg Cook was like the protege, the ideal of what you would want the quarterback to be at that time. Big, strong, powerful, great arm. Gets hurt in a ball game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Shoulder shot, gone. That wiped out his career right there. So the next year, Bill's the offensive coordinator. They end up having, I think they end up with Virgil Carter, former BYU quarterback. Well, Bill changed everything because of Virgil's ability. That's where the West Coast offense from Bill's perspective came into play. The short
the Midwest
pass, the timing, the rhythm, and all that kind of stuff. That's where all of his new thinking evolved right there, because he had to adjust to the quarterback he had, not the one he wanted or the one he had, because that guy no longer was there. So there's a great example of a coach taking the talent that he has and now reconfiguring from a mental process and concept what kind of offense you're going to run to fit the attributes of that quarterback who's going to play for you. And Virgil had, they had tremendous success throwing the ball, great percentages, high passes, that so-called horizontal passing game, the timing, the rhythm, that all became a fruition because of the quarterback who Bill was coaching.
And Brock Purdy would have fit right into that tradition.
Perfectly.
Perfectly. Perfectly. And if Bill, he were alive today, you think he'd like watching Brock Purdy?
Oh, and Bill would have worked more on Purdy's footwork and timing. See, now that's the other thing. See, Bill was a footwork guy. Mm-hmm. His footwork, you had 15 different drops a quarterback would take in the passing game. You take a three-step drop. Well, let's say Bill had a quick three. He had a one and two. He had a big three. Based on, am I throwing a slant? Am I throwing a hitch? Am I throwing a quick out? On a five-step drop, he had a big five. He had a three and two. He had a fast five. So every pass pattern which Bill called, there was a specific drop that timed up with the pattern. So you as a quarterback, same thing with seven steps. Am I going five and two? Am I going four and three? Am I going a fast seven? Am I going a big seven? So everything timed up. He was one of those guys who orchestrated everything around the pattern and the timing of the quarterback's drop so that when the quarterback got set up, bam, the ball was coming out. But the timing was set so that the drop was in rhythm with the anticipated receiver. So when that back foot hit, Joe would gather or Steve would gather, boom, ball's coming out. Because it all
so where Al Davis would look at Brock Purdy and say, his arm isn't strong enough, Bill would look at him and say, his arm's fine for me. I just want to keep refining his footwork so his timing can be even better.
Correct. The anticipation of being able to get the throw so that now I could throw it into a tighter window or there's smaller space because now the timing is going to be such where the DB is not going to have the reaction time because the ball is going to be on the way. Bam, he's going to turn around and the accuracy, the trajectory of the ball is going to be there. You know, in the old days when Snake was quarterbacking and stuff, Kenny Stabler, we used to throw the nine route off of seven step drop. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you, one of the best things that Plunk would do, and even Clifford with a big bomb, the ball would be down on the 21, 22 yard line after about a 45 or 50 yard pass. The next play, immediately Plunk would throw a quick hitch to Cliff because the corner would be back. And Clifford went to
a shell shocked.
This is amazing now. I used to keep all the stats. And Cliff, in a whole season, would average 11 yards on a hitch pass that was thrown 5 to 6 yards. He averaged 11 per catch on a hitch.
Just because the other team was scared of him.
And it's the timing of when you throw it, what you've done to allow the hitch to be successful. Mm-hmm. We're not going to open the game and throw the damn hitch. No. Mm-mm. We're going to take you to the cleaners and go deep. And then the hitch is going to be there whenever we want it because you're going to be backpedaling. You're going to be like turning around thinking about, our philosophy was to, through, and beyond the defender. We never looked at the DB. Our eyes were always down the field. We wanted to create a vertical, physical, and a visual pressure on you from the get-go. It's like bump and run. Hey, you're in front of me. I'm not looking at you. I'm looking beyond you. I'm thinking end zone all the way from goal line to goal line. And then
okay.
You put the fear of God in the DB. You better be backpedaling coming off the bus.
Yes, I like that. Okay, let's change gears a little bit. We talked about Brock. We've talked about Kyle. Let's talk about the team as a whole. They were in the Super Bowl again this year. They were leading late multiple times. They didn't close the deal. They were 2-point favorites. A lot of people picked them to win. Which team was better in the Super Bowl, Kansas City or San Francisco?
I hate to say it. It's not which team was better. It's which coach was better. Mm. And not to be cruel to Kyle, but the bottom line is Andy Reid was the better coach that day.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Whether it's Mahomes or whether it's Purdy or whether it's Kelce or whether it's Kittle, no. You got great players on both sides of the field. You have to have a great coach that day to win the game. And Andy Reid was the better coach at that situation. And he found a way to win the game.
It's interesting. A lot of people will look at the nine or that matchup. I think Kyle will look at it that way. Like, we may have had the better team, but they have Patrick Mahomes and he's an all-time great quarterback. But what you're saying is on that day, the gap between Mahomes and Purdy was smaller than the gap between Kyle and Andy Reid.
Correct. See, to me, I go back to the third quarter because the Niners had a chance after the interception. The destiny for that game and for the future of the rest of that ball game rested in the hands of the Niners offense and the play caller because they had the ball back. They got a turnover. You got to capitalize. You got to find. And, throwing 11 passes and only completing two or whatever the stats were. Was he 2 of 9 or 2 of 11?
Something like that.
And he had three runs.
Yeah.
And you threw the ball 9 or 11 times and you only ran the ball 3 times in that third quarter. I'm sorry, but from a coach's perspective, when you're ahead and you're not burning clock and you're not exerting your force and your momentum on the opponent, that to me, there's the ball game right there.
Right. You're in control of the game at that time. Correct. You can call the plays that run down the clock, close out the game, as opposed to just calling whatever and asking your quarterback to be special or whatever.
It's time now to play situational football. It's not about the players and it's not about your Wheaties box tops blue plate specials that you've drawn up for 2 weeks or a week and a half or whatever. That's over. Now the focus is on the game and closing the deal, not displaying your offensive guru passing genius. That's not the game anymore. That was the first half. Now you're to, let's get down to basics and play football. What's it going to take to win the ball game? What plays can I repeat that were successful in the first half from a different formation, a different motion, a different shift, but with the same scheme that had gained yards in the first 30 minutes? So I got to have repetition. I may show you it. Okay, how many different ways can you prepare your meatloaf? You know, how many different ways can you fix chicken? Well, we're having chicken, but now I'm going to have four or five different recipes for chicken. The same thing with running a play. I have different ways to show it, different ways to disguise it, to distract the defense with different personnel groupies. But hey, we're still getting you chicken.
What killed me about the final play of the season for the Niners on offense, if you remember it, it was 3rd and 4 from the 9 in overtime, the Chiefs 9, and they went empty backfield, Christian McCaffrey in jet sweep motion, play action to Christian. It's like, I don't think they'd ever run that play ever. So with the season on the line, they didn't go chicken. They went like duck or something very exotic that they hadn't eaten ever and they couldn't digest it. It was very strange. So I want to ask you a question. You mentioned Andy Reid. He's the best. Would you agree that he's the best? What sets him apart from Kyle in your eyes?
You know, he understands what it takes at the moment to be able to get the game in control or to win it. And he's able to make the decision, take his ego out of it. Okay. He's not worried about being a genius play caller. You know, see, the thing about today's football, it's a pass happy league. Okay. So you got all these coordinators who want to prove that they have a genius quality. They've got creativity. Your creativity in their mind comes in the passing game. And, you know, you can get a guy out of the stands to call a run. So, you know, no coach has been called a genius because he can run the football. Otherwise, Chuck Knox would have been a genius a long time ago because ground Chuck, you know. Well, no, he's throwing the ball. And see, as a coordinator, you've got to be able to take yourself out of the game and call the plays to win and not worry about your image, the label they have on you. Have some reporter talking about how great you are as a play caller because your creativity is so good. No, no. You got to be able to win the game. So you got to do whatever it takes to win. You got to run the ball to win. You throw for show and you run to win. I'm sorry, that's the bottom line. Now, Mahomes and a couple, hey, the Chiefs even this year improved their run game. I tell you a classic case. 2 years ago, Andy was running a lot of RPOs. Well, Mahomes was throwing the ball a lot on the RPO, sometimes when he should have been handing the ball off. So Andy says, well, wait a minute. You're violating the theory and the concept behind the RPO. So therefore, now I'm taking the RPO away from you, and I'm calling the run, and it's a give it. It's no longer you looking at a conflicted defender and making the choice of whether you're going to throw the ball or hand it off because you're abusing that concept. So I'm going to take it off the plate and take it away from you so we can run the rock a little bit more. And then, bam, this year you look at Pacheco, they had a pretty darn good run game.
Especially it seems to me like since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback there, Andy Reid's offense has evolved a few times. They used to have Tyreek Hill. Now they're like a 2-3 tight end offense that runs the ball, and they're just starting to add a little bit of speed back to it. I can't say that Kyle Shanahan's offense has evolved. It's been pretty much the same for about 5 years.
Correct. He's got a philosophy. And, you know, the great thing about Andy is he has adjusted to the personnel that he has. And he finds a way to utilize his roster and find something. He brings in the third and fourth tight ends or the second and the third. He takes Kelsey off the field and then he's still throwing the ball to his backup tight ends and they're still making plays. So he finds a way to keep them involved in the game, and he finds a way to give Mahomes outlets to other receivers other than, quote unquote, the star power guys, whom everybody expects will get the ball anyway.
One thing I find interesting comparing these two coaches, Andy's 20 years older than Kyle, and yet he's the one who's more flexible, more willing to evolve with the times, whereas Kyle's very dogmatic. This is how my dad did it. This is how I do it. This is how we're going to keep doing it.
You know, the key thing is to be able to adjust. Okay. Yeah. I, you know, it's like we had, you know, a guy named Marcus Allen, a guy named Bo Jackson. Then we have Roger Craig and Tom Brathman and Eric Dickerson. Hey, you know what? As much as you'd like to throw the ball, and, you know, it's really great to see that thing going over the top of the defense all the time, you know, in a quick 6-8. Our idea of a drive is give me one and done. Okay. That's, I forget the three, that the multiple plays. Hey, if we can hit, if we get a shot play on you and we can score in one play, bam. Okay. We're taking it. We're not going to give it up. But sometimes you got to run the ball.
Yeah.
You have to be able to suppress your thoughts and your ideal and your dreams and do what's best for the club.
The Niners don't have many weaknesses. A lot of people think they have the best roster in the league. If they had one weakness, it would probably be their offensive line. They have a great left tackle, but they don't really invest in the other positions very much. And yet they still make it to NFC Championship games fairly regularly. So how important, how pressing are their issues on the offensive line?
Well, you know, it's hard. I mean, I look at the offensive lines that we had at the Raiders, and you got Shell, you got Upshaw, you got Dalby, you got Mosebar, you got Mickey Marvin, Henry Lawrence. You got some quality players. And you had some great running backs. Nowadays, it's hard with the salary cap to be able to have a multitude. Our Raider ball clubs that had 12 and 13 and 14 Hall of Famers on the same rosters, and seven or eight of them playing in multiple Super Bowls and winning them all in the 80s, and 80 against the Eagles and against the Redskins. And yeah, some guys who played in three Super Bowls and won three in the 76 game against the Vikings, as well as the Eagles and, you know, the, I hate to say Redskins. I can't say Commander, my God. But anyway, you can't do that today. The dynasties of the are kind of been capped and restricted because of the salary cap. But you've got to be able to have, you know, some players who can be constant quality performers for you. And somewhere along the line, you know, you've got to have an offensive lineman. I look at the Niners offense and you look at the left tackle, you know, someone's going to be his backup pretty soon because he's about at the end of his career. You know, how many more years does he want to play or can he play? How many games does he miss a year to begin with? And what success do the Niners have when he's not playing?
Not a lot. They're 3-6 when he's out in the last 4 years.
Now, see, that's another thing that tells you something. I got to say, when Trent Williams is not, how many games has he missed? He misses, what, 4 or 5 games a year, probably?
2 or 3, but that could increase as he gets older. He's been going to be 36 in a month.
Okay, yeah. And so I've got to think about when he's not healthy, when he needs a break, he needs a blow, you know, who am I putting in at left tackle? How's that impacting our performance? How's it impacting our protection? What runs? You notice if I look at the Niner offense, they have a certain run philosophy that they have to the left, and they have a certain run philosophy they have to the right.
Explain that.
It's predicated upon the personnel. You know, I look at their right side of their line. They are more of the outside zone concept of the inside zone, where they have a button run philosophy where we're going to, you know, and you look at Kittle at the point or Juszczyk at the point where they just button run and run their feet. And then, you know, once in a while, you'll see a button turn. You'll see a button cut. The backside's playing button wall. But when I'm running to the left with the Niners, they're running the leads and more physical style of run.
Makes sense. Because they got Aaron Banks and Trent Williams over there.
Yeah. And on the other side, they're using more foot speed and stretch concepts because they don't have the power to knock you off the ball, which the left side of the line has. So they have to complement what can those linemen do on the left side and what can those linemen do on the right side. But now they've got to be able to, you know, you're not going to find 5 linemen, all of whom can do the same thing. So you've got to say, okay, what philosophy do I have that fits with what we can do on the right side of our line? And what philosophy can I have that fits with what our left side of our line can do? And then you've got to find players who fit those mindsets and those philosophies that you have offensively.
You mentioned that the reality of modern NFL with the salary cap is you just can't load up the way that you could in the 80s that the Raiders did, that the 49ers did. So you sort of have to pick a position group where you're going to maybe try to save a little bit of money. And the question is, should that position be offensive line? It seems to me that the Chiefs don't skimp on the offensive line. They lost that Super Bowl, and they've been pretty invested in that position group since. Meanwhile, they traded Tyreek Hill. While the Niners, I mean, Chris Forster just the other day said, we like to invest in players who touch the football. So, you know, they're trying to keep Brandon Ayuk. They kept Deebo Samuel, and they start Colton McKivitz. Do you agree with the 49ers philosophy, or are you more like Jim Harbaugh, who sees the offensive line as a weapon in and of itself?
Okay. You can have all these great weapons on the outside, the Ayuks, the Deebos, the Kittles, and all that. But if you can't protect and afford the quarterback enough time to get the ball to those guys, what's the worth of having all that talent on the outside and you can't get the ball to him because the quarterback's tits to the sky and, you know, he's right on his back.
Or the ball has to come out in a second and a half.
Correct. See that?
Right.
Okay, here's the classic. Okay, everyone talks about this Ayuk guy. Frankly, I think that this may shock people or whatever, but he's not utilized in the Niners' philosophy like he should be. So from my perspective, he's being wasted right now. Mm-hmm. I would have traded Ayuk and got players and or draft picks because he's never going to be utilized and worth the amount of money they're going to have to pay him for what he's going to do in the Niner offense, because the Niner offense is not designed to take advantage of what Ayuk does best. So that's not a good fit. You might like the guy. He may look great out there in shorts, running the routes in practice and all that. But on game day, how many shot plays does this kid get?
Two a year?
Yeah. And see, for what I'm going to have to pay him, that's not worth it. But right. I can get something worth it by trading him to Buffalo or someone else who could. Josh Allen would love to have Ayuk in Buffalo. Oh, my God. He would salivate on that one.
Would Al Davis have wanted him?
Oh, yeah. You know, I look at just like having Aldi with Mike March, my former college classmate, was running the Rams show. You know, he had all those great receivers. Mm-hmm. Ayuk would have fit right in there with those guys. With
Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt. Yep.
Oh, there's no question about it. But on the Niners, you know, now I see you go back. I look at Jerry Rice. I look at John Tater and the Niners, the receivers they had then. Bill was able to utilize them with the slants and the timed routes and the hooks. And then he'd take up in slot. He'd run Dino. He'd run scissors and he'd run razor and some of those concepts. And he would set up a deep shot every once in a while. But I tell you what, Ayuk probably in Bill's mind would be what he would have wished that Freddie Solomon would have been, or that he would have wished that Ronaldo Nehemiah would have been. Mm. And see, that's Ayuk today. And see, Bill would have found a way to get him the ball down the field.
Mm, interesting. But it's hard to find the way to get the ball down the field when your offensive line really can't pass protect. And that was one of the reasons they lost the Super Bowl.
Well, and the other thing is, the best way they can do it, if they can't do it off a pure dropback, it's got to be off of play action. So their shot passes. And see, here's the other thing, Grant, that I think is critical. And we at the Raiders always believe this. You don't just call a pattern with a specific route for the receiver. You give them options on it. Okay, let's say we're running a fire pass with aggressive offensive line blocking protection. We're selling the run. I'm going to give Ayuk an option. I'm going to say, okay, you're going to run the post. Now, if you can't, if you're even, you're leaving. If you know what I mean by that. If you're even with the DB, you're leaving. Okay, if you can't catch him, I want you to slam on the brakes 17, 18 yards and hook it up in the hole. So you have an option. I'm not just running the post and having a dead route because the DB is deeper than that and you can't catch him because they're laying back in the weeds, but we're going to slam on the brakes and you're going to run the hook. And that's part of the package. We would take a guy like Branch and put him in the slot or put him down in a nasty location and put Marcus outside wide or whatever and say, okay, you're going to run down the field. You got the seam route. Okay, if the middle of the field's open, you're going to rock and roll and hit the hole in cover two. If it's man high, safety high versus man, you're going to run the square in. If it's three deep zone and you can't go by the secondary, you're going to hook it up. So you got four options. So I can get the ball to Branch when I want. I don't want to go through the whole ball game and beat Bill and say, geez, Joe, we didn't get the ball to Jerry. Well, you know, like we called flanker drive and they did this, and we called this and they did that. We tried to run a juke route and they did that. You got to have options for the receiver. You just can't call a route in a pattern and bam, that's what you're running.
Because if you do that, then Brandon Ayuk might just have three catches in the Super Bowl. All right.
And you know, the thing about it is, you now see, here's the bad thing. I don't want to get into a guessing game with the defensive coordinator as a play caller. I don't want, because he might have woken up on the wrong side of the bed. He may not be the guy that he has been all season long, who I've got a book on. All of a sudden, the guy came out and he had scrambled eggs instead of Wheaties for breakfast, and he's a different guy. And now I can't get a feel of him because the same guy didn't show up who'd been there the first 16 weeks. So I've got to have the flexibility with the receivers and the passing game to be able to call a pattern with a route in it that gives my guys options in case they can adjust to the coverages so that the coverage cannot stop what we want to do.
Oh, okay, Tom, final question. Do you think the 49ers will win the Super Bowl this upcoming season? They've come close. They've kept their team together. They got Brock Purdy on a very cheap rookie deal for one more year. This kind of feels like the last dance of this particular group. What do you think?
To be honest, it comes down to Kyle.
Hmm.
They got all the players back. The hardest thing now for them is that they busted their chops the last few years. They were that close to getting the brass ring last year. What stopped them from getting the brass ring?
Kyle.
So what is the Kyle factor going to be? Has Kyle learned? Has he grown? Has he matured as a play caller, as a game manager? See, the whole key thing to me is that, you know, you got these players, you got all the talent in the world offensively. They're doing their best.
But did he grow? Did he learn? He fired Steve Wilks. It was the defense's fault.
The thing about it is, hopefully Kyle has learned. You got to evolve. Mm-hmm. And you got to utilize your talents. You got to utilize your players. And you got to decide, you know, I got to allow them to succeed. Put the ball in their hands. Let them make the plays. Years ago, we had Steve Berline as a rookie playing quarterback for us. And I'm telling Bootsy, I said, now look, Steve, you know, you got all these guys around you. You got the Bows and you got Loftins and you got these receivers and you got these. Just put the ball in their hands and let them make the plays for you. They're going to make you look like a pretty damn good quarterback. And Berline threw for over 34,000 yards as a starting quarterback, you know, in the NFL. And we go out, I think we beat the Chargers 42-10 on opening day with him at quarterback. I just let them get the ball in their hands. Let them make the plays for you. As the head coach, as a play caller, put the ball in their hands. Let their greatness, let those five guys, rather than one person, win the game for you. Those five guys, the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. So all those five guys are going to be more of an impact than any one guy can be by himself. And that, in this case, is the same thing with the head coach.
Yeah. You know, you've mentioned something earlier when I asked you the difference between Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan. And you said with Andy, he can take his ego out of it. He doesn't need to be looked at as the genius or the reason that they win. I feel, not to speak for you, that Kyle has a tough time doing that. That he wants to be seen as one of the main, if not the main reason that they win. It's not good enough to have all these weapons. He's a weapon. And I think maybe that's gotten him into trouble a little bit at the end of these games where his legacy's on the line.
The bottom line is he's throwing when he should be running. And, you know, it's not at that point, it's about winning the ball game. It's about the team. It's about the big picture. It's about closing the deal, getting the job done. It's not about who's doing what. It's about the process, and it's about the result. That's what counts, the result.
It's not about having the best yards per play average that you can in that game. Like, maybe that would be your goal if you're an offensive coordinator.
You know, you're not playing fantasy football. You're not playing video games, okay? So you got to take all that crap, throw it out the door, okay? That's gone. The bottom line is, what's it going to take at that particular time, in that point in time during the game, to be able to win the game? And doesn't matter who makes the plays or who makes the calls, but the job is get it done.
Well, Kyle, if you're watching, I've been doing pro bono quality control work for 8 years. I'm just trying to help. Tom's here as well. He's trying to help. It's on you. You got the best team. You got a really good quarterback. If you're the coach that everyone says that you are, you can win the Super Bowl with this group. But the question is, Tom, do you think they will win the Super Bowl this year?
I tell you, it's tough to get back there again when you came so close last year. And the worst part about it is you came from ahead to lose. And that just, you've got to be able to cleanse your mind as players and as coaches and just get a degausser out there. It's like, and erase your brain from all of those feelings, the sentiments, the emotions of how hard you worked and the fact that you, how you lost the game. You got to be able to get that out of your craw. But the thing about it is, I got to go back out there this year, and I've got to think that I could play as well or better than did last year, but is that going to be enough to change the outcome? That's the key. And
right,
who
like
the person to change the outcome?
Now that, yeah, who can give more than they gave last year? Kittle? Ayuk? McCaffrey? How can McCaffrey give more than he gave last year?
See, that's the tough part. So what is the factor that's out there that can sway and swing the pendulum the other way?
There's Ricky Pearsall.
Guy. Yeah.
And that's the thing that's so amazing about the Niners. They've been on the doorstep for 4 years, and they haven't found that one player or thing or whatever to push them across the finish line. And this year, it feels like this offseason, they kind of stood pat.
You know, it's like there was a movie, something about always the bridesmaid and never the bride. Why is that girl always a bridesmaid and she never gets to the altar herself? That's Kyle. He's got to get to the altar. What's he doing that's preventing him from getting to the altar and being the chosen one?
It must be tough for him at Thanksgiving dinners where he's sitting there with his dad and his dad's just got those Super Bowl rings kind of tapping on the table. Like, I'm really proud of you, son. You're doing a good job. Like, yeah, thanks, Dad.
Okay, now let's go back. Why did his dad get those rings? How many times did Elway in the Super Bowl and did not win with Elway? What was the factor that allowed them to win Super Bowls?
Come on. Running the ball.
Thank you.
Yeah.
His father discovered run the rock. They had this guy named Terrell Davis, who was a 6-year-old.
He's pretty good.
Had been at Long Beach State. They canceled football. Terrell ends up down in Georgia. And what was he, a 6th-round draft pick? Mm-hmm. Or free agent? Sixth round. Until they ran the ball, Elway didn't win Super Bowls either. And he's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Great arm.
Funny how that goes.
You throw for show, you run to win. Remember that.
I'll write that down. Tom, this was phenomenal. Thank you so much. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I love watching your podcast. Of course, you and your father are just the most dynamic duo ever to grace this podcast and world.
Well, thank you very much for watching. Me and my dad will be doing a podcast in a couple hours. So I'm really eager to post this and have my audience get to know you. This was great. Thanks, Tom.
Appreciate it, Grant, and good luck with all your endeavors.
You too.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.